Valley Theatre, which is currently producing two feminist plays, The Independent Female, or A Man Has His Pride, and Eve Has Not Been in Paradise Yet. Elaine Heffernan is the director of the North American premiere of Eve Has Not Been in Paradise Yet, and Joan Mayer did the lighting design for both plays. Perhaps you could start out, Elaine, if you could tell us a little bit about the plays.
Okay. The Independent Female, or A Man Has His Pride, is it uses the style and the form of a conventional 1800s melodrama. It really, you know, super uses it to give a very strong political feminist message, very class conscious, about organizing working women. It's very focused political message, and it really, you know, makes a point and drives it home. Eve is very different from that, or this is the way I feel. It's very diffuse, it's very vague, it's very unfocused. It hardly gets into social class, political aspects of women's condition at all. It's much more concerned with what's happening inside and the effect of socialization on women. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
The women that I went with and myself, after seeing the plays and enjoying them very much, and I encourage everyone to go see them. But we were talking about the fact that although we enjoyed them, we felt that after you were in the movement for a couple years, or anyway for a lengthy time, there were other struggles that we hadn't seen represented in any art. And I don't know whether you know of any plays that deal with that or anything in the theater, but where are they? Where are the plays for old feminists?
I don't know. I have been thinking that perhaps as the feminist movement is a new movement, as feminist theater is a very young theater.
In the same sense, the black theater was a very young genre not too many years ago, that these plays have not been produced yet. When I look at the shows that we're producing at Back Alley, I must admit that I had the same feelings about them and that they are presenting conflicts which I myself had worked out already.
Uh-huh.
However, when I look at our audience and at the response of the audience, I realize that women, you can't generalize about women as a whole and where women are at, so to speak, and that our plays are very meaningful to a lot of women who are just kind of in the early stages of consciousness.
Right.
About who they are.
Right.
And as I was saying earlier, we are a theater which encourages the community to come, and so that most of our audience for this play has been women. The majority of people have been women, and the first play encourages women to participate, the audience to participate, and I sit in the audience quite frequently, and the response of the women is really interesting because the younger women really respond and they'll shout out and really get into the play. And the older women appear to want to, but they're much more inhibited. And they might yell right on and then they'll look very embarrassed.
Yeah.
and look away, but it's, you can see that they're really responding to what is being presented.
Right. But when selecting these two plays, I mean, did you have to go through, were these the only two around? Well, I know they're not the only two around, but, you know, was there a large number that you chose from? And what do the feminist plays look like? All I know is that, you know, the few people that I've talked to haven't seen any,
mm-hmm.
any plays that deal with, some of the problems that you have after you get into the movement, and the doubts and the fears.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't seen those scripts yet. I hope some exists. My feeling is that they're just, you know, beginning to be written, and that, you know, 5 years from now we'll see a lot of them. We didn't select these plays out of any pool. For about 2 years, Naomi and I have been trying to read feminist scripts or scripts from feminists. We read some Myrna Lamb plays. We liked them. We weren't terribly turned on by them. We didn't feel too keen to do them. We kept on thinking we'd look for something that we liked better. We heard about Eve through a friend who had come from Peru, and that led to our producing it. We read Independent Female in Notes from the Third Year and said, oh, we got to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Here's a real good political focused play, you know. So it was the way things usually happen at Back Alley. It was more in terms of, you want to do something and you're pressured, you're doing other things, you're reading feminist plays, but you're really not. You just keep on thinking that you will, and you write letters to Anselmo Dell'Olio and you don't hear back and whatever, you know.
Right.
But you keep on groping for it. Then all of a sudden you find that you've made a decision to do two plays, you know.
Right.
But first you had to get the board of directors to read the plays and the board to decide to produce them and things like that.
Right. Back Alley does a lot of theater about the black experience, and in a sense that awareness is older than the feminist awareness. Have you seen that happen with the black theater that you put on? Or
seen what happen?
This progression from documenting and trying to reinforce the initial vision of what is going on, and then dealing with the problems that come after you have this awareness.
I think it was quite different, because there was a considerable, practically a vast literature of black theater to start to choose from, even in 1969 when we decided to do Jonas, Bill Gunn's play, and Day of Absence. And that vast pool is constantly growing.
Hmm.
It's very hard to make any neat comparison
right.
to ours. We're about maybe 200 years behind the black movement as far as the literature is concerned, I feel, you know, dramatic literature.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the play that you directed, and it's a Peruvian play, and I must admit that I was shocked that it came from Peru, which proves that I am a part of the stereotype that believes that Latin American women are, you know, super oppressed, and I was very surprised that, well, that's not such a stereotype, but I mean, I was surprised that it came from Latin America, because I thought that they were so oppressed that you know, they wouldn't have the time or energy to create this play, which in effect was the most serious or play that I had seen, feminist play, in terms of dealing with inner tensions and turmoils.
Mm.
Do you know anything about the background?
Yes. we had the delightful experience of visiting with Estela Luna, who is the playwright. She came to the United States, spent about 2 weeks here, came to a couple of rehearsals, and again through the woman who translated the play, Elsa Sagasti, I spent an evening and was able to ask Estela a million questions and things like that. She's a fantastic young woman, an actress, right now married with small children and therefore not doing much acting. She's working in the Ministry of Education designing programs of elementary and secondary education to do a better job with children.
Mm-hmm. This is in Peru.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's a socialist, but not in terms of political party. She's a socialist in terms of the way she sees social relationships. Maybe a very good way to convey why Estela, you know, could write that play was this little thing she told me about. As a child, she was taught, whenever she was introduced to an adult or anyone, to curtsy, very European, and say, "Estela Luna, at your service." But she never would say that. She always refused to say "at your service," because she didn't know why she had to offer herself to be at everyone's service. She would only say "Estela Luna." She was a rebel from the time she was about 5 years old.
I heard a story about your play. I understood. I had the same reaction that toward a play written by someone from Latin America. I was very surprised until someone told me that it had been smuggled out of Peru.
Not true.
No?
Not true. Someone is romanticizing about this. It makes a very romantic story, but it's not true.
Running the blockades.
It was produced in Lima, Peru. It was performed first before an invited panel of important people, including government people and all the rest of it. Let's remember that Peru has a left wing, or at least so it says, a left-wing revolutionary Marxist government in power. Okay?
Right. Well, good. They're seeing those plays down there. I also wanted to talk about the fact that theater today, big theater in New York, Broadway and off-Broadway, really isn't leading anywhere, which is leading anywhere in terms of expanding consciousness. And that plays like Hair and most of the plays on Broadway, even they're going backwards, they're, you know, lapping up nostalgia. And that Hair was produced years after, you know, a lot of the changes that are shown in that play had occurred, and it was really following rather than leading people. And theaters like Back Alley are
trying to deal with it. Do you you like to talk, either of you, on sort of the state of art today? Does it exist? Does it not exist? And if it exists, is it in back alleys?
That's kind of a broad question. My feeling has been, since I've been working at Back Alley, that it takes theaters like Back Alley, theater companies like the San Francisco Mime Troupe, which is basically a street theater, and theaters of this genre, to really produce plays that will raise social consciousness. It's theaters like Back Alley that are willing to take the financial risk involved. The larger theaters, the equity theaters, are not interested in a particular type of play or a play dealing with a particular type of subject matter until it's been proven that it's going to be box office. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the big thing.
Well, how does Back Alley exist? I mean, with plays that aren't quote-unquote back.
We're non-profit, and we operate through grants from various public and private sources.
And the little box office that we do have.
And the little box office.
It's very important. But what we should also say is that, you know, Joe says that we can take the financial risk, or we are willing to. The fact of the matter is that just to exist is so impossibly hard, practically impossible, that there is no additional risk involved in doing it. I mean, we exist because this is the kind of theater we want to do. But we never know whether 3 months from now we'll have the money to pay 3 months from now rent, you know? And that's a condition of being this kind of a theater.
Right.
And it's horrible.
No,
creativity sustains you, but in the meantime, you know, everyone's getting screwed because they're working for nothing or for too little, right?
Right. But it definitely takes theaters like ours to produce this kind of drama, and be the leaders if we do have kind of a thing going here, in terms of the kinds of plays we produce, and hope that the larger theaters will start producing these kinds of plays. But there's a definite time lag, even when you consider how long Back Alley and similar theaters have been producing black drama, for example, and it's just now that two of the larger theaters in town are producing black drama and finally see that it is relevant, and unfortunately that it does draw box office, since that is the main criterion for the theaters.
But there are other plays besides The Great White Hope.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, on that too, we should recognize that as far as the black thing goes, you know, Bobby Hooks has done a very, very important thing, and he is building in
I
a very systematic... I'm sorry. He is the founder of the Negro Ensemble Company in New York and has now established the D.C. Black Repertory Company. He's starting slowly and systematically, raising money. He now has his D.C. Black Rep in operation. And it is black theater that he's doing. But at the time that he has got that going, and I admire tremendously what he's doing, it is now at this time that Arena, which is not a black theater, and the others are now beginning to do it because, yes, it is box office, you know. The audiences that are going to Bobby Hooks' theater are mostly black. The audiences that are going to certain other theaters are probably mostly white, wouldn't you guess, or not? But now they'll do a black play and get black audiences in there too, right?
Yeah.
Bobby, among other people, have demonstrated that there is a black audience in Washington.
Mm-hmm. And obviously from your two plays, you're demonstrating there's a woman audience.
Right.
Exactly. Could you talk a little bit about the receptivity to doing these two feminist plays? We've been talking about black theater, and which you do. And a lot of times in the women's movement, you hear people saying, well, if I was a black, or if a black said that, people would take me seriously, or they'd be outraged if this had happened to a black, but since it's happened to me, it, you know, as a woman, it's not taken seriously. Do you find that these two plays are taken as seriously, and the audiences are as receptive to the message?
I feel
or
the
to the oppression. The delineation of the oppression.
I think that our audiences for these plays, which have been comprised mostly of women, have been very receptive and have identified with the conflicts presented in the two plays. My reservation is that it's difficult to try to write a play which is going to reach women when there's such a wide spectrum.
of development in terms of social consciousness and in terms of women seeing themselves as human beings as opposed to kind of the other stereotypes they've been socialized to believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I personally felt that although I could identify with it, it didn't say to me what I would... the conflicts presented were not the conflicts that I was going through. So although I'm receptive, I would have liked to have seen something with a stronger statement or dealing with slightly different issues since I've kind of been through that
right.
and worked that through. However, the women who do come, some of whom are, you know, are at kind of that stage of development, and so therefore the plays are very meaningful to them.
Right.
And I think they do find it to be kind of an enlightening experience, or at least kind of a justification of their own views and a justification of kind of the self-analysis they're
yeah.
going through now.
That someone else thinks the way they
do. Somebody else
yeah.
thinks, yeah.
How political do you think theater is? I mean, do you think it's an effective political tool?
I think it is absolutely political. I don't see how it cannot be political. I'm not talking now about, let's say, getting Brechtian about anything, but by the very fact that the characteristic function of theater is to perform publicly a piece of drama in front of an audience. This is a public act. It has got to be political. There's no way it can't be. There is a political content to anything you can say in a play. You're constantly having a political function. The question is whether you're going to be aware of it and whether or not you will focus it in some way, like there's a certain kind of thing you want to say. What do you think, Joe?
I agree, but unfortunately there's a great time lag in theater. The women's movement has been, I first became aware of the women's movement as a movement about 5 years ago. These are the first feminist plays produced in the theater that I've seen. I have read about women's street theater, which I know has been in existence for about 3 or 4 years, particularly on the West Coast. But as a medium, I have found that theater really does not satisfy what I would like to see theater doing in terms of raising political consciousness, because it just takes too long to get it together, to find a theater that's willing to produce that kind of play, to find the kind of play you want to produce, which you really feel is going to have a message that your audience can relate to.
But there's a difference there. I mean, do you think that theater is political? I mean, can be political, but it's just not, or...
I think it can be, and it is just not, but I have reservations about whether theater as it's run today in America, I have to restrict
okay,
to the geological,
right.
Whether it ever can be simply by the nature of kind of the system of management and administration that we use, whether it really ever can be, because it's just, it can't, theater, and this is excluding street theater, cannot be immediately responsive to the political issues at hand, and since things change so quickly, I don't really feel that it is as responsive as it could be, although I have my reservations about whether or not it ever really could be.
But see, I agree with what Joe is saying, but I'm being a little bit more neutral when I say it has a political function. To put on a play is a political act, but it is not going to determine the outcome of an election or change the consciousness of a city. It's like a grain of sand,
right.
and it melds in with many other kinds of political activity or operation.
Yeah, my feeling is when I am involved with the production, I'm hoping that the production will make a statement that I would want to make. As a designer, I'm dealing with a kind of a different set of ideas in terms of what I do in theater than what the playwright or actors are dealing with. And I have found at Back Alley that the kind of statements that are made in general are ones that I would like to make. A recent example of something that artistically and politically fulfilled what I would like to do ultimately in theater is The Torture of Mothers, directed by Glenda Dickerson, which was a production based on a book written by Truman Nelson, which describes the plight of the Harlem Six, who were a group of boys who were arrested during the Harlem riots and were imprisoned for what, 8 years, just incredible things. And Glenda took Truman's book, which was a compilation of tapes of discussions with the mothers of these boys, and Glenda took this and put it into a production theatrical format, which was very effective. And what was even more effective was when the audience realized that this was a true story. It wasn't a fictionalized, this was a true story. This is what really happens to people. And hopefully we motivated some people to action, you know, some people to write letters. We exposed something.
We exposed, but I, you know, like, we may even have motivated people to write letters, but I don't think that that is going to probably be of much effective relief to those boys, and nothing can relieve what their mothers have already endured. This is the distinction that I would make there. But certainly, I mean, again, it was a tremendously political piece of theater, and no one could go out of that theater without their consciousness quite raised, right? So in that way, it was a tremendously effective political thing.
And in addition, I felt it was artistically well done.
Yeah.
I just felt it was an excellent production on both the artistic levels and political levels, and it was very close to the ideal of what the kind of thing that I would like to be involved in.
Mm-hmm. Could I throw in something that I remember Glenda saying, which goes to some of the points you've raised? She, we've worked on a couple of shows, and I have heard her say more than once, the scripts that I want to see on the stage do not exist. I don't want to do what you can go out and buy in a store. Mm-hmm. I have to create my own material. What I want to do, I have to make up myself. I think feminism, you know, that
right.
We have to create our own material too, right? And it's like the Langston Hughes thing, is someday someone will write about me, Black and Beautiful. They will write about me and tell my story. I guess it'll just have to be me. No one else is going to do it, you know?
How did it feel? You defined yourself as a feminist. Yes, it's a heavy word. To direct a feminist play.
It felt wonderful. It felt it's very difficult to direct, and I had never directed a play before from scratch, say from audition through opening night. I had co-directed a review with someone and worked with a lot of directors, but it was something I wanted to do, and I'm very grateful that the theater gave me the opportunity to do it. They really took a big risk, you know, because, you know, we could have got to opening night and maybe my play wouldn't have been ready to go up, and they took a chance, right? Okay. It was very hard, it was very demanding, it was full of all kinds of learning, and it's just, I don't know, I'm talking very vaguely now. It was very exciting to work with these six human beings in my cast. I anticipated that I would probably have some difficulties with men, and in fact I did. Not with the men who are now in the play, but we did lose a cast member, and I think it was because he had problems with what the script brought out. The three men in the play have been wonderful to work with. You forget, you know, sex goes, actors' bodies are tools, and you work together to create something, and it's a colleague relationship. The women have worked very closely among themselves, the three women in the show, developing certain things. That's been very exciting to watch them find things, to go inside themselves and find things. I'm babbling.
No, it's fine. It's just that I'm trying to think what it would be like to be a director, and you know, and to point out nuances, or perhaps you could do it this way, and the only way you get that is from your own experience.
Mm.
So I would think that directing a feminist play would be a very, I don't know, revealing thing, but also a very hard thing, because you'd be delving inside yourself constantly.
Well, I was terribly clear in my head about the, intellectually speaking, about everything I wanted to bring out through the dynamics of the stage. I adapted this script for production, you know. I worked with the translation to adapt it from too many Spanish cultural references to references that would work now here at least a little bit better. One reviewer feels that we really did not successfully adapt it. So that I knew everything was very, very clear up here. And so then when we had the auditions and everything, what I was terrified of is, will I be able to get it out of here through these wonderful people and onto a stage? And I don't know, the audience is the judge of that, you know.
Right. But how does a director, how do you how do you direct nuances? Or, I mean, I don't understand the theater. I mean, is it the, what is the dynamic? I mean, is it sometimes the actor, sometimes the director? That's,
yes,
that's probably the way
it
works.
I think so.
But I mean, but when it's the director, how does it work? You see somebody, you know, lifting a cup, and you say, no, don't lift it so quickly.
Right. Well, actors work on motivation a great deal, and an actor who is serious wants to have an understanding of the character. You give an actor a direction of what you want. We want so-and-so to be clear here. The actor's task is to go and find whatever motivation is necessary to have something that will work on stage. That's a pretty extensive thing to try to talk about, I think.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, okay. Well, I'm going to ask Joe to talk about an extensive thing, too. Talk about women and the technical roles in the theater and what happens to most of them. We were talking about it earlier, that
right.
you get sort of funneled off into changing the gels or something.
it's difficult. It's very difficult for women in technical theater. I'm a lighting designer primarily. Hopefully we'll be getting into set design fairly shortly. There are several top women's lighting designers, but it's very difficult to get the kind of technical background that you need if you go kind of the professional theater route, in the sense that I work for one of the major theaters on the light crew, and I get to cut gobos and gel. And I'm very rarely allowed up on the grid hanging instruments and this kind of thing. Now, I've done this before, so it's not as though that knowledge has been denied to me. But women do seem to be funneled into props or makeup or stage managing and denied the kind of easy access to technical knowledge that men have, just by virtue, it seems, of being men. In addition, I understand, although I went to a women's college so that they couldn't discriminate against me because I was the crew, and if they didn't like
right.
me, that was it. In larger coeducational institutions, I understand that women theater majors in technical theater are programmed into less demanding props, makeup, kinds of technical theater. Not less demanding in the sense that it doesn't take as much physical wear and strain,
right.
And you to get anywhere in technical theater, you have to be able to pick up technical knowledge, like how does a dimmer work, how does a tape recorder work. You have to know electricity, you have to know wiring, you have to know all sorts of little technical nuances that you don't get unless you really fight to do it, or unless you give it an opportunity, like I am at Back Alley, to explore these kinds of things on my own, because women don't want to know those kinds of things, I'm told.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. How did it feel when you made the decision that you wanted to go into that? I mean, did you always know, or did you, you know, was it difficult for you to get into technology? Did you have to fight a battle with yourself, in a sense, since that was not a traditional thing?
No, I was brought up to believe I could do anything I wanted to do, regardless of my sex. It's difficult to.
You never said, may I serve you either. Huh?
Oh, no. But it's difficult to keep fighting these battles, and I'm now at the point where people will listen to me because I know enough that they can't say,
good.
You know.
You don't know. We don't have much time, so I think we should, one of you should give a quick plug for when, where, and how they can get to see these plays.
We're located at 1365 Kennedy Street. It's the intersection of 14th Colorado and Kennedy. The show goes up Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights at 8:30 through April 15. Call the box office any Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday afternoon after 4 p.m. and make your reservations.
Right. That's the Back Alley Theater, and if you want to see two feminist plays, The Independent Female or A Man Has His Pride, and Eve Has Not Been in Paradise Yet. I recommend them.
Phone number 723-2040.
That's an aggressive female.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Joe Mayer, and thank you, Elaine Heffernan. And thank you, Laura Burton, our engineer. I'm Juanita Weaver, and this is Radio Free Women. Be free.